Welcome, Screensavers. I'm Michael Gallet.
I'm Matt Sturdivant.
I'm Tyler Sutkus.
Together, we host the Silver Screensavers podcast, and today is the day to review all of the 2021 movies. It's one of my favorite days of the year. We'll be giving you our top 10 movies. I'm going to be giving you a lot more than 10. And we're also giving out the first annual Silver Screensaver Awards, which may or may not be released as a bonus episode, but either way, it's coming at you. What I want to talk about first, guys, is just how did you feel about the movie year in general? Was it strong? Maybe not as strong as other years. Tyler, what did you think?
So I don't think it was as strong as some years in the past, but I think coming off of 2020, which is a really weak year due to COVID starting and movie theaters really not being in effect, finally getting back to the movies was cool. So I definitely was pumped for a lot of these to see them in theaters again. It was really nice after that 1 year break.
I totally agree. The last movie I saw in theaters before the pandemic was Birds of Prey.
Same.
So,
oh yeah,
you could say that I was very antsy to get back to the theaters and start seeing some new movies that hopefully, well, I can attest that a lot of these were better than Birds of Prey.
I think the last one I saw was Portrait of a Lady on Fire, which is a very different movie than Birds of Prey. I can attest to that. For this year, this was a year of like discovery movies for me. I loved a lot of films that I either hadn't heard of until close to their release date or even past their release date, new filmmakers. Part of that is some of my favorite filmmakers made movies this year that I didn't like very much, and perhaps I can talk about those later. But I didn't mind it a lot because I discovered a lot of new stuff, which I always really enjoy, and being back in the theater was awesome. So without further ado, we're going to get to our top 10s here. Tyler, I'm going to go to you first. Did you have any honorable mentions, or are you just going to go to 10?
I just kept it down. I went through a lot to keep it to 10. I didn't know we were doing honorable mentions. I would have kept some more, but I threw some off. I do want to mention my 10 was between two movies, and that was No Time to Die and No Way Home, Spider-Man, which ended up taking it. We did an in-depth analysis of this movie a few weeks ago. But I think this just highlights to me the theater experience, and I think that's why it won out. I mean, it was, as much as I had problems with story and stuff of it, I think just the theater experience of just people cheering as, like, you see these old characters was really fun to be a part of. It was nice to see these characters that I used, like, of movies that I watched as a kid, like Tobey Maguire's Spider-Man Return. So I picked that to be my top 10. Just really missed the theater experience like that, so that really drove it home of how fun it is to be just in a crowd of people to witness that.
Despite all the people just talking the entire
time.
Yeah,
I mean, that's the bad part. But, I mean, no, it was just still a cool atmosphere.
Yeah, it was really cool. It was really fun. I even clapped, and I never clapped. Matt, what's your number 10?
Do you clap when a plane lands, though?
I mean, I'm relieved. Fun fact, I my mother once had a plane of people sing happy birthday to me when we were traveling on my
awesome.
Birthday.
That is awesome.
And I had no idea, like, we just landed and I'm like, all right, I'm ready to get it off this plane. And then, like, the stewardess announced it, and then I just sat there while people sang happy birthday.
Did
never
the pilot
sure what
come
to
out?
Do. No, they don't. I'm convinced there are no actual pilots on planes. They just flick a switch, and the plane goes to Pittsburgh, and that's it. There's no actual
this
pilot.
Is true. Yeah, they just have some guys walk in to be like, I'm your pilot, and then they leave.
What if plane takes... So what if the pilots came out, and it was Tom Hanks and Denzel Washington?
Oh, boy.
Then you get off that plane.
Flight's a movie I'd love to talk about at some point, but not today. Not 2021.
What about Sully, though?
Sully's fine.
Oh, I was thinking of Castaway.
Oh, no, that's one of my favorite movies. Sully, it's good.
Anyway.
Matt, but speaking of good movies, Matt, what's your number 10?
So I do want to give an honorable mention, a couple of honorable mentions. I'm going to lump these together in one sort of honorable mention. The reason they're honorable mentions is because they don't technically qualify as films because they're TV shows. But
okay.
Pretty much all of the Marvel Cinematic Universe tie-in TV shows of the last year, WandaVision, Loki, Hawkeye, those have a very special place in my heart because, you know, it's the first time I've had an experience in a while watching a TV show where I've, like, giddily waited at the end of every episode for the next week to come through. and the fact that they're significant to the larger cinematic universe at large. And I think if these were all like extended films, they would, I mean, the production quality of some of these shows would almost right up there with something of like a cinematic quality. My other honorable mention is Old from M. Night Shyamalan. The reason it's an honorable mention is because it has no business being shoulder to shoulder with any of the movies I'm about to list as my top 10. But I think it still does hold a place of cultural significance, at least in my opinion and in my heart. I'm sure we'll get into it more later as to why. But that one sticks with me regardless of what some might consider its quality.
Yeah, that will show up in our award show, definitely.
Now for my actual number 10, I put Last Night in Soho from Edgar Wright. It had great performances from the lead actresses, Anya Taylor-Joy and especially Thomasin McKenzie. It's a solid like mystery, supernatural type thriller from Edgar Wright, which is something new from him. The visuals, the score, the soundtrack were all catchy. It was an immersive movie to watch. You really felt like you were in the setting for most of it. The only drawback to it is the fact that the narrative does kind of go off a bit off the rails toward the end, which keeps it from being much higher on my list. But it's definitely worth at least a watch through once.
Yeah, I actually read the screenplay of Last Night in Soho this week, and it just reminded me of like how really, really cool of like a first half or even two-thirds of it has, and then it just unfortunately falls apart, which is not the best thing ever, but it happens. I have quite a few honorable mentions. Luca, the new Pixar film I really enjoyed, and Encanto, the Disney animation movie. Palmer, the Justin Timberlake, I don't know a single other person who has even heard of this movie on Apple TV Plus, but it exists, and I really enjoyed it. I suspect other people might not, but I really did. Tiger, the HBO Max documentary, two-part documentary on Tiger Woods, was really cool earlier in 2021. Licorice Pizza, Old Henry, Zola, The Last Duel, we all really loved. King Richard, one that I don't hear talked about as much, maybe next week once the Academy Award nominations come out, but I really, really like that movie. Pig is great, Passing is great. A couple that I was really considering for number 10, which I kind of love and hate top 10 lists because, you know, sometimes you have more than 10 favorite movies, but these are still two of my top favorite movies of the year. One is Spider-Man No Way Home, when the three stars are together there at one point. It is just one of the coolest things I've seen in a theater in I don't even know how long. And the other is West Side Story. I mentioned it on the show an episode or two ago, and you know, that was just such a cinematic experience. And I also want to give a special award to the Fear Street series. This is Lee Janiak's adaptation, kind of loose adaptation, of R.L. Stine's teen horror novels. It was a serial production, so you got one of them for 3 weeks every week this summer, and I couldn't wait for them every single week. Awesome cast of young actors. Kiana Madeira really heads them off with a lot of charm, a lot of fun, and I liked it a lot. But for my actual number 10, this is a movie that is incredibly bizarre and incredibly moving, and it is Titan. This is about a woman on the run who pretends to be the long-lost son of a lonely man. That is a very sparse description for all the stuff that actually happens in this movie. Tyler, would you agree?
100%.
Yeah. This is written and directed by Julia Ducarno. There's a lot of hype for this movie. For the first half, I was enjoying it, but like I didn't know how invested I could be. You really have to be willing to get on the wavelength of this movie. But especially the second half, it grabbed me both as an entertainment and an emotional experience. Agathe Roussel, the star, does so much without getting to say too much. She's pretty silent for most of the movie. And Vincent Lindon is incredibly moving as a father who's pretending that someone else is his child, and like he knows that he's lying to himself, but he has to hold on. He has one of the best dance sequences of the year, like very unexpected. And it has a great structure where there's an inevitable event that moves things along, but there are still interesting subplots, so you never know what's going to happen, but it doesn't seem aimless like a lot of movies do. by the end of this movie, they just had me and they weren't letting go. For a movie to be so absurd but so moving, I had to put it on the list. Tyler, what's your number nine?
My number nine was James Gunn's The Suicide Squad. I was a huge fan of The Suicide Squad before the first movie came out. When they announced the first movie was being made, I was pumped. You know, that was back when the DCEU was still a thing, like it was just starting. And I was pumped to finally see this team. And then they released pictures of what the team looked like. And I'm just like, what is this Hot Topic garbage that they have?
Hey, easy on the Hot Topic, okay?
I'm not insulting Hot Topic. I'm insulting the decisions on them.
I mean, I guess I don't really care now. It's not like I work there anymore.
Yeah, when it came out, you know, I kind of was like, oh, yeah, that was good. You know, I was trying to convince myself. It was not. After watching it again, I absolutely hated it. I hated what they did with it. So I was pumped to see a new, like, kind of a reboot of it, even though it still is technically a sequel, I guess.
It's a requel.
But I think it's just, a requel, you know. Watch Scream 5 to have the
information. No, don't.
Yes, dude.
But I enjoyed every minute of this. I love James Gunn movies. He can make these funny movies that are just have the gross violence, like graphic violence, but still be comedic at the same time. And I think Idris Elba, John Cena got his own series off this, which I love too. They're just great. Even the newcomer, I don't know how to pronounce her name, Daniela Melchior, I believe. I'm butchering that badly. Great as the Rat Catcher. Basically, even like they got Polka Dot Man to have a emotional moment in that, like you've rooted for Polka Dot Man. So I think he does well with these obscure characters that he's given it, and they're just like, do whatever you want with them. And I think that's when he works his best, and I think he did really well, especially in that role of just these obscure guys that you didn't really care for, but by the end of the movie you care for them.
Yeah, I like this movie a lot. He really earned the title of horror, that weird marketing, the horribly beautiful mind of James Gunn.
Yeah, the first trailer was just the actors praising James Gunn.
Yeah, that was it. Yeah.
And look, now we're all praising James Gunn. So
hey, I like the movie. Matt, what's your number nine?
So I'm looking at a lot of my picks, and I'm sure you guys are going to disagree with a lot of my picks coming up.
I think that's good.
But I'm ready for it. So my number nine is The Harder They Fall.
Okay.
From James Samuel. I like the movie. So, it's got an all-star cast in a somewhat unconventional Western. It's got Regina King, Idris Elba, Lakeith Stanfield. Was Delroy Lindo was in this, right?
Yeah.
Delroy Lindo. I really enjoyed all the action scenes. I liked that, that they took a little more contemporary of an approach to the score and the soundtrack. Especially the remix of Here I Come by Barrington Levy. That song is an absolute bop.
I'm thinking of.
Tyler specifically told us like that he hated the score of this movie.
And that's what I'm saying though. I adored the score of this movie. I mean, how many times do you have to hear the spaghetti western? You know, you got to change it up. You got to.
And Tarantino did much better.
I think I'm between you guys. I like this movie quite a bit. I think I was just like a little too pumped for it. The star power behind it was like, oh my god, this is gonna be the best thing ever. And then I didn't like it quite as much, but still very, very good.
No, I will agree with that. That's why it's not higher on my list. But that's another one, much like Last Night in Soho. It kind of comes apart narratively toward the end, which keeps me from putting it much higher than it is, but for what it is, I think it's fantastic.
I agree. My number nine is a movie that I mentioned on the show, but we didn't really talk about at length. This is A Boy Called Christmas. This is about grieving children who receive a visit from their aunt, played by Maggie Smith, who tells them the origin story of Christmas, directed by my beloved Gil Keenan, written by him and Old Parker, and based on a book by Matt Haig. I already spoke about this, but I'll say, most of the stuff I watch every year at Christmas, which is a lot, came out decades ago, was made decades ago. I almost forget that new Christmas stuff can be made. I just don't see it as much. But this, to me, is a new classic. It's really fun. It's sentimental without being sappy. It has Maggie Smith giving people attitude, which is great. It's a Christmas origin story that doesn't feel the need to shoehorn in every single Christmas tradition. And it just tells a fantastically whimsical story that I'm going to be putting on around Christmas time now. So that's it. Number 9, A Boy Called Christmas. And it's on Netflix if you want to check that out. Tyler, what's your number 8?
My number 8 was Judas and the Black Messiah. I think it is the performances by Daniel Kaluuya and Lakeith Stanfield are absolutely incredible. They actually got nominated for last year's Oscars, both in supporting actor, which confused everyone because both the main characters getting supporting roles means there's no main role. But I think Lakeith Stanfield especially, I mean, I love Kaluuya, everything he's in. I think he's one of the best actors working today. But Stanfield absolutely is incredible as this man that's torn between, you know, working for the FBI, but actually falling in line behind this message. And I think the subject matter is something that should be more known. The program the FBI ran back then, COINTELPRO, was absolutely horrible. So I think more movies exposing what that was, like only 50 years ago that happened, 50, 60 years ago. And it was kind of absurd. Like they literally executed a man. So and did even worse stuff than that. So I think the subject matter is more pertinent than ever now, with all these cases of police brutality, especially at the forefront of everyone's minds. So I think it came out at the right time, and it just had these incredible performances that you just, heartbreaking, because like, I knew what happened here. I think most people did. So like, the buildup to that is really tragic, to see what he stood for and like what happened to him. So that was definitely one of my top ones.
Yeah, it's an excellent movie. I often forget that it was 2021 because it competed in last year's Oscars, but yeah, I highly recommend that. I don't know if it's, is it back on HBO Max at this point?
I think it is.
I believe it is, yeah.
Okay, cool. Yeah, check that out. Matt, what's your number 8?
My number 8, I put Pig, directed by Michael Sarnowski and starring Nicolas Cage. I think it's a beautiful, bittersweet, yet relatively simplistic plot. It's got a really touching commentary on the significance of friendship, love, and relationships. So, for those that don't know, the plot of this movie is basically there's this truffle hunter in the woods who his truffle-finding pig gets stolen from him one day, and he sets out on a journey to go find it, and that's basically the plot of the whole movie.
And can I just interject here real quick? Yeah. If you haven't seen Pig, stop here and see Pig or skip past this, because you need to go in as blind as possible for this movie to really appreciate it, in my opinion.
That's fair. That's a fair point. So anyway, Pig, it has a beautiful, bittersweet, yet relatively simplistic plot to it, as I mentioned. Basically, his relationship with the pig filling the void of his, it was his wife that passed away, right? Before he went off the grid. So, it's just, you feel nothing but sympathy for this guy who's, like, his best friend is that pig, and he's got, you know, going through all the motions to get it back. Nick Cage is fantastic in the role. And I'm not going to go into the ending, but it's just a very, very simplistic yet well-made, well-acted movie. And it's definitely one of my favorites of the year.
Yeah, the restaurant scene where he meets the chef that he had worked with years ago is really riveting and awesome.
Yeah, I actually did write that down. I forgot to mention it, but that's like, I'm going to say unforgettable a lot going through my picks, but that was definitely one of the most unforgettable scenes of the whole year.
Yeah, totally agree. My number 8 is Stillwater. This is about an Oklahoma man who travels to France to try and prove the innocence of his imprisoned daughter. He begins a relationship with a local woman. This is directed by Tom McCarthy, written by him, Marcus Hinchey, Thomas Bittigain, and Noah DeBris. I saw this at a time when I was feeling very restless inside. I had some stupid stuff going on. And in the middle of this movie, there's a very peaceful section with these lovely scenes that just stopped my restlessness and made me feel very calm inside. It's one of those movies where it's like 5 different movies in one, but in a good way. I kind of liked it in this one. You get to certain points in the movie where you think, I don't know if they can go any further with this. And then there's a left turn, and they go a completely different direction. There are a lot of moral dilemmas in this, a lot of cool food for thought, you know, what would I do kind of thing. It's not my favorite ending of the year, but I still like the ending a lot. Damon is very good. I got introduced to Camille Coctine, and it was really great to see Abigail Breslin again. I feel like we hadn't seen her in a very long time after being very prominent as a child actress. So I know this one got, I don't want to say critically panned, but maybe like a little more critically mixed reviews, but I really enjoyed it a lot.
Last time I saw Abigail Breslin was the Zombieland sequel.
Oh, how was that? I never saw it.
I remember liking it. I mean, about as well as the first one. I mean, the first one's a cult classic, and I think it holds up. And I don't see a lot of people talking about it, but I almost forgot it existed until you started talking about Abigail Breslin, but. Even so, I'd say it's worth a watch.
All right, double tap. Tyler, what's your number seven?
My number seven is Power of the Dog, directed by Jane Campion, starring Benedict Cumberbatch, Jesse Plemons, Kirsten Dunst, and Cody Smith McPhee. And at the time I watched this movie, you can hear my full thoughts on the episode. We did an episode on this, so if you want my full thoughts, listen to that. I was just pulled in by the performances. And I think they still hold up now. I think Cody Smith McPhee, especially, is this kind of, you know, almost weak-seeming person that's like, oh, I'm going to protect my mom, and you don't really believe it. And then, I'm spoiling here, but by the end, it comes around. And it's just, it's a crazy twist, and I really enjoyed it. And just seeing Benedict Cumberbatch, you know, as his character, you know, this evil guy, you know, they could have easily made him like this stereotypical villain. To see kind of the motives behind his actions is really interesting. I think it's a movie that's based on the characters. The plot isn't really that important. It's the characters themselves that are important. And it's really interesting to see everything kind of unravel as you learn more about each person. I think all the performances are incredible. And if you haven't seen this movie, I think you should.
Yeah, I totally agree. You can get our full thoughts, but I think that's a really wonderful movie. Matt, what's your number seven?
My number seven is Free Guy. It's like Ready Player One, but better, in my opinion.
That's a great review.
No, but really, so it's about the AI bank teller who discovers that he's actually an NPC inside of like a Fortnite-esque, Grand Theft Auto-esque video game. Starring Ryan Reynolds as Ryan Reynolds in a Ryan Reynolds role. But this is the best example of it that we've gotten this year. I think I adore the concept. I adore the story of the sort of, and I really enjoy its attempt at commentary on existentialism through like versus like predeterminism, but it does it using the tool of the video game world and his sort of discovery of his existence within it. The supporting actors were all fantastic as well. Yet Jodie Comer, Joe Keery, Taika Waititi, Lil Rel Howery was great in this. It was really strongest cast, strongest story of the Ryan Reynolds films this year. And it's a fun, action-packed ride. It's definitely a summer blockbuster, like the definition of a summer blockbuster. Like, I wouldn't say it's the most original thing that's come out this year, but it's got enough originality to it to justify its existence, in my opinion. And I thoroughly enjoyed it.
Yeah, Jodie Comer was really the discovery and the standout of this movie to me. She made it much more enjoyable than I think it would have otherwise been. My number seven is Don't Look Up. We talked about it. This is the Adam McKay movie. It's about astronomers that discover an asteroid that's going to destroy the Earth in 6 months if it isn't stopped. They go on a press tour, try to convince the government. We have a full episode on this, so I'm not going to say too much. It's not a perfect movie. It felt so much like a slightly absurd impression of a lot of life right now. Not all of life, but a lot of it. And I enjoyed this thoroughly, and I'm just so in awe that a movie went where it went. So that's my number seven, Don't Look Up. Tyler, your number six.
My number six was The Card Counter. This is directed by Paul Schrader, starring Oscar Isaac, Tiffany Haddish, and Ty Sheridan. And I think it's always a feat that you can make me enjoy a movie with Tiffany Haddish in it, so I give Paul Schrader credit there. I actually think she's not that strong in this movie. She's all right. Ty Sheridan as well. But Oscar Isaac alone, I mean, he carries this movie. Willem Dafoe is great in his supporting role briefly. But just the kind of the emotions of this man struggling with like morality, like what is he responsible for? And like, is he like, he's trying to redeem Ty Sheridan's character. And he's struggling to deal with what he lived through. And I think we mentioned this on a previous episode, you did, Mike, of just the Abu Ghraib scenes are just gnarly as hell. You know, you got like the fisheye lens panning over all this like chaotic, like absolutely absurd stuff that you're watching, and it's just, you can't watch it and feel like, you feel uneasy, you feel gross watching it, like it just makes you so uncomfortable. And I think you talked about how incredible like that was, how it was done. But yeah, it's just a great film. I think Oscar Isaac has a great performance. Just kind of seeing that the plot is so odd to me, like I didn't expect it to go there at all. So as it goes on, you get engaged, and there's some points where I felt it kind of dragged a bit, but I definitely recommend it.
Yeah, I think this movie is excellent. It's very captivating at parts. The Oscar Isaac of it is fantastic. He had a great year in movies. But Matt, what is your number six?
Okay, so I'm going to go a little off my notes here because I originally had The French Dispatch by Wes Anderson.
East Anderson.
Northwest. I originally had The French Dispatch from Wes Anderson as my number six, but you guys brought up in your honorable mentions a film by another Anderson that I criminally neglected to put on my list, so I'm going to put it here now instead.
Oh my god, you were like the biggest champion of this.
Yeah, I know. So instead, I'm going to go off my notes a little bit, and I'm going to put Licorice Pizza at number six from Paul Thomas Anderson. We talk about this a lot on our Licorice Pizza episode, so I'm going to try and keep it brief. This movie is just like a 2.5-hour dream, just escape from reality, just from the scenery, the cinematography, the acting, the score, the soundtrack, like the directing, just everything about this movie is just so fantastic. Really like pulls you in. The story, while it does make some creative choices that I didn't personally agree with, and I think would not have affected the movie if they were adjusted to make them a little more palatable, for the most part, it's just like a story of a deep friendship between two people at pretty different points in their lives, but yet similar in that they're both seeking something that the other one has, as far as like a character trait, like with Alana trying to, you know, feel young still, but also coming to the realization that she is 25 and needs to grow up, versus Gary, who is younger, but he's been an actor, a child actor, so he's feeling like he wants to be mature for his age, and he acts pretty mature for his age, and he really just wants to catch up to the level that Alana is at throughout the whole movie. And I see the two of them kind of wrestling with this age versus maturity type concept. And it's just a very deep, thought-provoking movie. And I enjoyed just about every minute of it.
I'm in shock. Let me ask you guys this. You ever slept on a waterbed?
Yes.
I don't think I have.
How was that?
It was a weird as hell.
Did you like fully fall asleep on it?
It was a long time ago, maybe.
Was it a soggy bottom waterbed?
It was not. I don't think it was a soggy water. Soggy bottom waterbed.
Soggy water. I hate soggy water. It's the soggy worst.
Soggy water? I
hate it when my water gets soggy. My number six is a movie that I don't know a single person on earth who has even heard of this movie. But okay. This is Bombay Rose. This is an animated movie. It's about two lonely young people in Bombay, otherwise known as Mumbai, who find each other amongst the chaos of their lives, of the city. This is written and directed by Gitanjali Rao. This was a painted animation. It was made frame by frame. It took 18 months, And this is a beautiful work of art and cinema. The whole thing has this very ethereal quality, or ethereal quality, I never know how to say that. Something very powerful about it. Its two stars, Kamala and Salim, are more developed than a lot of characters in movies. They have fantasies and goals, and they do all this different kinds of stuff. It also follows a lot of other characters. It's very mosaic. The animation is stupendous. It's not a movie to watch if you just want to be entertained, but if you're looking for a beautiful experience, please give it a shot. That is on Netflix. Tyler, what's your number five?
My number five is the movie Matt just dumped out of his list on a whim, and that's Wes Anderson's The French Dispatch. I could list the cast, but this episode would be 4 hours long, so you can look it up on IMDb. It's every actor who's working currently is in this movie. I actually think, aside from one part of the movie that I didn't find that enjoyable, I think it's Wes Anderson at his best. I know, Mike, you disagree heavily. I don't say it's necessarily at his best. I think it's at his most Wes Anderson, I should say. Very stylist. I really enjoyed most of the stories. You know, you can watch our episode on it. Listen to me more. The Jeffrey Wright story, I absolutely adore. So if you're into a Wes Anderson, absolutely watch this movie.
Yeah, we had an episode about that. I won't get any more into it. Matt, what's your number five?
Number five, I've got King Richard, directed by Reynaldo Marcus Green, starring Will Smith. King Richard, for those that are unaware, it follows the rise of Venus and Serena Williams through the lens of their father, Richard. And it's really, for Will Smith, it's probably a career-defining, at least up to this point, performance from Will Smith, because we mentioned this on our episode where we discussed it. Will Smith really just disappears into the role as Richard Williams. You know, you said it, Mike, on that episode. When you go to a Will Smith movie, typically you go there to see Will Smith in a movie. Where this one, you don't get that. You get Richard Williams, who also happens to be played by Will Smith. I also want to make note of the supporting actresses Sanaa Sidney and Demi Singleton, who played Venus and Serena respectively. They also gave fantastic, very sincere performances. This film made me care more about tennis than I ever have. And I also want to mention John Bernthal was also fantastic in this.
Yeah.
Just from like a biopic, it's just such a decent biopic. Will Smith plays Richard Williams. Isn't such a nice, and I really just enjoyed that one as well.
Yeah, there's something so pleasing in this movie. It gives you like these twinges of darkness that are very much great food for thought. Really, really, it's one of those movies that like, it's hard for me to express what I love so much about it, but absolutely check that out, King Richard. I expect we'll be talking about it a lot more as Oscar season approaches. My number five is a movie I already mentioned on the show. It's Lorelei. This is a man who is released from prison and reunites with his high school sweetheart. Together, they rebuild their lives as dreams from the past threaten their futures. This is written and directed by Sabrina Doyle. This movie just clicked with me. I don't know how to explain it other than that. It's such a pinpoint on the feeling of being stuck and having no idea how to get out of things and even which direction to go in. Pablo Schreiber, Jenna Malone, every other performer in this movie, you can feel their wasted chances, their desperate dreams, and all the interaction that they have. The character choices are unexpected and keep you guessing, but they totally make sense. There's a lot of grace and beauty to this movie. I'm doing a pretty poor job describing this, but this ending has kept me thinking since I saw it. It's not predictable, but it just felt right. Please check it out. It's on Hulu. I want to see whatever Sabrina Doyle is doing next.
Not yet.
Tyler, what's your number four?
My number four is Ridley Scott's The Last Duel. I think it tackles a subject matter that is, in a way, like such a dark subject matter that's so hard to talk about. It tackles it in a way that you get three sides of a story, and it's an interesting way in that you get like how they think they come off, like, and then when you get the end, which it says the truth at the end, you really see both of the male characters who you just saw their stories, how flawed they are, how like they lied in their own account. And it really is powerful in that way that, like, you know, you see all these cases today that basically he said, she said, and you know, like, people are saying their own version. And I think this did it well in showing that, like, even when they said they did this, like, even in her version, like, they came off so much worse than how they said. Like, even her own husband saying, like, oh, in this scenario, I did this. It comes off so much worse. He was so much, like, nastier in it. And it's just a really interesting portrayal of this kind of story. And I think it did well to, like, convey that. I think it's tough if you're a trigger warning, because it does show the scene in question twice, which is tough to watch. But I think it does effectively convey a message that it's not just doing it just because. It's really showing, like, how this event of, like, an event like this could be shaped in different ways, and how to see, like, people are going to show their own side of it, no matter how untrue it is.
Yeah, I just want to piggyback on that real quick, because I'm having just watched it recently, too. I found it just so thought-provoking that it lays out the chain of events, and it shows each person's side of it, and how each person probably genuinely believed that their side was, especially the two male character, the two male players in the game, or in the game, the two male players in the events. They, you know, it was told in such a way that that's probably the way that they truly believed it played out. So it does a good job of balancing the multiple perspectives and seeing how this stuff could have been perceived without necessarily justifying their actions and trying to convince us to, like, without casting doubt on the victim either, could, because of how they basically make her, they label her details of the events as the truth as they are. I think it does a very good job of balancing that.
I just wanted to bring up another thing I was thinking of that I forgot. I think it does, because I saw a lot of people before this came out and after it came out who hadn't seen it saying, like, oh, it's about two men having a fight over this, like, without the woman being involved. And I think that's the point of it, is that it's showing how messed up the system is even back then. Like, it ends up not being even about Jodie Comer's character and what she went through. It becomes this battle of glory between these two men who've been fighting their whole life. And it gets pushed to the end, and then at the end, when they win the battle, he becomes the hero of it. And I think that's the thing about the story, is it really shows how the narrative gets twisted in that the victim gets thrown out of the whole thing and the hero comes out as on top, and it's all about him now, even though the whole event was about her. And I think one scene that really just drove home, like, the parallel storylines of the tellings was the scene where Matt Damon's character first finds out about the sexual assault. And in his story, he's all supportive, angry at Adam Driver's character, all this. And then in her story, the truth, he lashes out at her and blames her. And, you know, and I think that's really, even in just learning about the assault, that he can't even tell the truth about that. Like, what happened there?
Yeah, Jodie Comer is magnificent, essentially playing, like, three different characters, all of them perfect. This is one of the more famous box office bombs of the year, and, you know, as such, I think it's one of the most undeservedly underseen movies of this year. Matt, what's your number four?
So my number four is The Suicide Squad from James Gunn. So, like Tyler mentioned earlier, this was the follow-up sequel/reboot of the 2016 Suicide Squad, which I similarly was also super pumped for and majorly let down for. All that said, this film truly redeemed the Suicide Squad IP in such an epic fashion. It took the few things that they did get right, mostly casting things from the first film, and they carried, you know, what worked over, and they got rid of what didn't, which was a lot of the first film. And bringing James Gunn on was probably the best thing they could have done, with his track record and his ability to sort of blend dark humor, bloody action, and killer soundtracks, and just make something so unique, so one of a kind. Every member of the team and the actors who played them were just phenomenal in their parts, I thought. You know, these villains, they're villains, but they're endearing and they're lovable despite their flaws. especially like the core team that we end up with at the end with Bloodsport, Ratcatcher, Polka Dot Man, etc., King Shark. They took the formula and they just perfected it, in my opinion. And a hot take I have here is that once Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 3 comes out, they've been talking about how that's going to be the last movie with that team, blah, blah, blah. Take James Gunn out from Marvel and just give him the DCEU for a while. Let him run the show like in a Zack Snyder-esque role. I'm not saying let him have it forever, because I'm sure that could possibly get old, even for the hardest core of James Gunn fans. But I think he'd be much better suited to the DC Extended Universe than to Marvel at this stage.
You know, I was actually going to say that, and you brought it up, which I'm happy about. I was going to say, like, the people that are like, Zack Snyder needs to come back to run this, I say the opposite for James Gunn. Give James Gunn the entire DCEU.
Yeah. At least for, like I said, at least for a while. I mean, everything gets old after a while, but...
Yeah.
Is Aquaman the next DC movie? Or is it...
I think it's The Flash. I think The Flash might be coming out first.
And the Batgirl, and who knows? They just add a new movie.
Oh, the Batman. Adam. Although that's not DCEU, technically, that we know of.
What is the DCEU right now? No one knows.
Maybe we can talk about when one of those movies comes out, but not for now. Let's have a happy day. My number four is the movie Together Together. This is about a man who hires a surrogate to carry his baby so he can be a single father. The friendship between the surrogate and the man grows as the due date gets closer. This is written and directed by Nicole Beckwith. This movie is so sweet, so freaking funny. I think it's the funniest of the year. And it's so sneakily sad. Patty Harrison absolutely nails her character's slow development of feelings, changes of belief, and she's hilarious at the same time. I think this might be the best Ed Helms has ever been in a movie. And I say this as somebody who likes Ed Helms a lot. He's often playing these characters who are annoyingly enthusiastic, maybe too much so. And this movie takes the bones of that persona and tweaked it so he's this guy who has some issues but is very genuine and someone to root for. I was very emotional by the end of this, and I think everyone should check it out. I believe it is also on Hulu.
I did not know that movie existed.
That's makes me sad. Everybody
but,
should.
But as soon as you said Patty Harrison, I'm like, okay, I'm on board.
Yeah, that's Patty awesome. Harrison. Tyler, your number three.
My number three is a movie you both talked about already, and that's Michael Sarnowski's Pig. Sarnowski. I genuinely adored this movie. I went in completely blind to this movie. I remember, Mike, you invited me to go see it one day, and I hadn't even heard of it. But I'm like, yeah, it's Nick Cage. I'll go see it. And I was blown away by what this movie was. If you watch the trailer for this movie, it's set up like a John Wick action movie. Like, he's going to get revenge on the people that took his pig. And it's just absolutely not that. I don't know if that was intentional or if the people who cut the trailer had no idea what this movie was. But it ended up just being such a touching movie on loss, grieving. The scene where they're cooking dinner, I'm going to spoil it now. Like I said, if you haven't seen it, go see it. Don't listen to me. I'm going to spoil a bit. There's a scene where he's having dinner, Nick Cage, Alex Wolff, and Alex Wolff's father, and he cooks him the meal that he served the father and his wife years ago, and he said the whole, I remember every meal I make. That was such an emotional scene for me. Guy just breaks down in tears and, like, complete reversal of who he was as this villain character. And it really just takes these tropes, like, you know, this guy's going around Portland bloodied, and like it's just such a surreal movie. He's just in restaurants covered in blood after being beaten, you know, multiple times, and yet it just makes it such a heartwarming story on loss. And this movie includes my favorite thing, which is disparaging remarks about the city of Seattle. But seriously, if you haven't seen Pig, I absolutely recommend you watch it. I think it's a beautiful movie. I think it's one of Nick Cage's best performances he's ever had. And just go in as blind as you can. Or if you want to watch the trailer and just be expecting that and then just get blown away by what it is, absolutely.
This one is so uniquely cool. You mentioned surreal, and it is surreal. I still think the most surreal aspect is that the dad just doesn't care that a bloodied stranger is in his house cooking a meal. But okay. Matt, what's your number three?
Number three, I put down Tick, Tick, Boom, the directorial debut of Lin-Manuel Miranda, and starring Andrew Garfield as Jonathan Larson. I remembered his name this time. I have to admit, one of the first time I talked about this movie, I forgot Jonathan Larson's name, even though he was the focal point of this movie. I also was never much of a Rent person. I don't know if I ever actually have seen it. So I went into it as a very below surface level knowledge of the man that this movie focused on. But nevertheless, it pulled me in from beginning to end. Andrew Garfield was absolutely magnetic as the titular.
as the character Tick Tick, tick, tick Jonathan boom. Larson.
Tick Boom.
Andrew Garfield was absolutely magnetic as Jonathan Larson. The music, the choreography was just so on point. The songs were just, some of them were just very catchy to me. And I'm definitely not a musical guy, although this is actually one of two musicals I really enjoy this year. I think the overarching, like, sort of narrative of him dealing with his existential crisis of turning 30 and feeling like a failure just it hit home with me a little bit, and just because I can absolutely feel what he seems to be feeling in this movie at some points. And just like the wanting to create something and just keep creating, but it keeps not catching. And then there's the whole other aspect of all of his friends dying from the AIDS epidemic, and just like the dealing with all the loss and the personal failure and grieving. It's a powerful character study for sure. But like I said, the supporting cast is great, but honestly, Andrew Garfield deserves the Oscar for this one.
So fun fact, my number three is Tick, Tick, Boom. I believe I watched this one night after we recorded, and I just entered another world for a while from the very first number. Matt, like you said, the musical is hitting very specific feelings that I related to a lot. Robin DeJesus was such an enjoyable apprentice. I wanted like even more of him than we got. Alexandra Shipp plays this character, and I feel the same way about DeJesus' character. Each of them could have had their own movies, and I would have liked all of them. Whenever a character did their thing and then left for a while, I wanted to follow them. Vanessa Hudgens gives a wildly good performance, especially in the song Therapy. That was unbelievable. She doesn't really get to be a character. That would be probably my biggest criticism of this film. But she makes the most of what she's got. And it's all anchored by, like you said, the superstar performance by Andrew Garfield. A musical can have a good story, but if it doesn't have the songs, it doesn't shine. And fortunately, this one has the songs, at least for me. Tyler, what's your number two?
My number two is Licorice Pizza, which we just talked about briefly. So, I mean, we have an episode on it if you want my deeper thoughts. I feel like the majority of people, and Matt, you're one of them, that take issue with the subject matter. I didn't have that issue, honestly. I don't think it did it in a gross kind of way.
Well, no, I'm not saying like I disagree with it, so I'm ready to disown the movie or nothing, but
I know, but I'm just saying like I didn't really, after the first scene, it kind of faded off. Like I don't think it really portrayed it in a bad way, but I think for Cooper Hoffman, his first performance absolutely nailed it. Like, it's incredible. I don't think he wants to be an actor. Is that correct? He said he didn't want to act.
I believe that's what I heard.
Okay. So if that's the case, more power to him. But if he does, I hope he does at some point and just gives us more, because I'd love to see more of him. It's classic Paul Thomas Anderson. He's really, I think most of his movies are phenomenal. So if you're a fan of him, absolutely go see Licorice Pizza.
I also, after Licorice Pizza, I also became a big Haim fan. Like, I listen to a lot of Haim, and they're good. They're good. Check them out.
If you're a big Haim fan, go watch Licorice Pizza.
Yeah.
What's your number two, Matt?
My number two is The Last Duel. So I did spill a lot of my points on Tyler's entry, mostly because I didn't want to forget them while I had them in my head. But The Last Duel, I'm going to echo a lot of the stuff that's already been said. I also want to say it's just like, generally speaking, it's just like a wonderful, you know, plot aside, it's a wonderful Swords and Chains cinematic epic. It's from Ridley Scott. It's easily on par with some of his best work. Gladiator, Blade Runner, and the like. Performances were phenomenal all around. Matt Damon, Adam Driver, Jodie Comer, like you said, Mike, she was absolutely the standout amongst all of these actors. I loved how the story balanced such dark, you know, it tackled such dark subject matter, but in such a sensitive way, as sensitive as it could have. And it really tried to, like I said, it did a good job showing the different perspectives and how each person genuinely believed they were in the right, even the ones that were downplaying or changing their stories around. And they did it to not to justify the perpetrator, but to show his perspective. But then they didn't victim blame or give us a reason as an audience to cast any doubt as to whether or not Jodie Comer's character's version of the truth was the truth, because they said it explicitly that that was the truth and that is what happened. And I just think it's just a very well shot, beautiful, thought-provoking movie, and definitely the better Ridley Scott release of 2021.
I think we're all agreed on that.
Yes.
Yeah. Deserves way better.
Check it out. My number two is a movie called The Killing of Two Lovers. This is about a man in rural Utah who is separated from his wife. He struggles to keep his marriage and relationship with his kids together as his wife dates a new man. This is written and directed by Robert Machoyan. The emotional weight doesn't lift for one single second of this movie. The chemistry between the actors, especially between the dad and the kids, is so natural. They felt like a real family, not like a movie real family, but a real family. The beginning is one of the most quietly intense that I've ever seen. I had no idea where it was going to go. Clayne Crawford made me love him. He did that thing where, like, I'm not a huge fan of an actor, and then they do something to make me love them, and he did it in this one. There's one scene that is so raw, it will keep you on his side the whole time. The setting is so bare, but they do so much with it. If you watch this, you're going to find that you're sitting on the edge of your seat as to whether or not a toy rocket blast off. It's going to mean everything to you. And Chris Coy continues his streak of playing really serpentine characters. So this all one is also on Hulu. I really encourage you all to check it out. Tyler, your favorite movie of 2021?
My favorite movie was your least favorite of your top 10. Oh. Titan. I mean, this movie was absolutely bizarre. It starts off with basically a serial killer, and just ends up as being like one of the most like heartwarming, like surrogacy family movies. I don't even know how to describe it. It's such a wild ride to think, like, by the time you're in the end of the movie, you completely forgot how the movie started.
Yeah,
and, like,
right.
I thought back on how the movie started. I'm like, wow, that was the same movie. It just feels like two completely different movies. The first half hour got to be the most bizarre movie experience I've ever had. A serial killer bangs a car, gets pregnant.
Don't give it away.
Yeah, it's the first part of the movie. First part of the movie. And then, so yeah, if you didn't see it, don't listen to me. Go see it then. But it just, the relationship between Vincent and, what was her name in the film? Agatha Roussel's Adrian. Character.
Well, Adrian? No, Adrian was the lost kid.
Yeah.
But her name was... Da, 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 da. Oh, God. It says... Hang on.
Was it Kirsch?
Yeah, I was about to say Kirsch.
Kirsch. I still don't know what his first name was.
I forgot, too.
It was Huey.
I don't think they used it much in the second half of the movie.
No, it was Richie. It was Richie Kirsch.
Alexia.
Alexia, okay, yes. The relationship between them just becomes this very emotional ride. And like you said earlier, like, you find out he basically knows, but he's just kind of trying to lie to himself to make it, like, to make up for how he lost in the end. And it's absolutely, like, the there's a scene between his ex-wife and Alexia where, like, basically just reveals, like, yeah, I know you're lying, but, like, just keep him happy, basically. Like, you know, like, I still care for him. I don't care that you're lying for this. Just, I want him to be happy. So if you can do that, like, it's fine. And it's just absolutely absurd where it started. The ending is bonkers as well. This whole movie is just an emotional roller coaster that I recommend everyone watch. I will mention it later in our awards, a specific scene that really stood out to me. So,
yeah, so I have been watching more and more of the Oscar International shortlist, and a lot of the movies are very good. I love doing that every year, but every time I watch a movie, I get more and more upset that Titan was not even it's ridiculous. Ridiculous.
Yeah, absolutely.
Matt, what's your favorite movie of 2021?
All right, my absolute favorite movie of 2021 is another emotional roller coaster, but for very different reasons, I'm assuming. And that is Spider-Man No Way Home.
No, exact same reasons.
I knew as soon as I walked out of this movie the first time that this was my number one of the year. It's like nostalgia straight to the veins in all of the best ways. It somehow managed to surpass my uncontrollable amount of hype that I had going into it. It was by far the best theater experience of the year. I know we touched on that previously in Tyler's entry, and I'm a little disappointed that the best is placed with you guys is 10. I mean, there were a lot of other good films in, you know, in 2021, and I don't want to get into the whole debate of whether this is cinema or not or blah blah blah, because I mean, everyone's entitled to their opinion, even if theirs wrong. But it was just such a touching tribute to Spider-Man's cinematic history, but at the same time, it set up new elements for what is probably going to be a both financially and critically prosperous future for the franchise, especially with the whole setup. It looks like, with it looking like it's going to start going back to basic Spider-Man in New York type stories.
Please.
Every performance was magnetic. Willem Dafoe, Alfred Molina, Tobey Maguire, Andrew Garfield, they all slipped back into their roles as if no time had passed, especially with the two villains and Toby. Like, you just, it's hard to see that. You don't see that very often, and you got to give it credit for that. I just love everything about this movie. I could go on and on all day, but I won't, because we have a whole episode on that. So go check that out.
Yeah, we reviewed all the live-action Spider-Man films. They're all there for you. So my favorite movie of 2021 is another movie that I don't know a single person that has heard of this movie. This movie is called The Map of Tiny Perfect Things. This is about a teenager played by Kyle Allen who is stuck in a time loop, experiencing the same day every single day. Bored and wanting to move on, he meets another teen played by Catherine Newton. Together, they must find a way out of the time loop while coming to terms with the relationships in their lives. Directed by Ian Samuels and written by Lev Grossman, which is based on his own short story. I randomly found this one day on Amazon Prime, and it was the most delightful movie I've seen in a very long time. It is very reminiscent of the YA movies that were popular when we were teens. Catherine Newton and Kyle Allen have the perfect amount of wit and sarcasm without being annoyingly angsty teens. It's smart, fun, heartbreaking, and I rewatched it just to make sure it was my favorite of the year, and it is. It's just the warmest movie with real emotions sprinkled in at the perfect moments. I can't even really explain why I love it so much, but I do. It's my favorite of the whole year. I'm assuming you guys don't even know what this is.
I've heard of it. That's the extent of it.
From me?
Probably.
Probably, yeah. I haven't heard of it, so.
Yeah.
But good.
I was surprised that our, well, not surprised, but we had until the end there, we had a very large lack of overlap on our list, which is, I think, is cool. Highlight more movies. Yeah. Well, we want us to highlight even more movies. We want you to tell us what your favorite is, whether you agree with our list, whether you don't, whatever you want to see in the new year. Please write to us at silverscreensaverspod@gmail.com. You can rate and review on Apple Podcasts and Spotify. That really helps out the show if you enjoy it. You can follow us on Twitter and Instagram at ScreenSaversPod, and our Facebook is Silver Screen Savers Podcast. Matt, where can you be found online?
You can find me online at MattyXSturds, STURDZ. That's on Instagram, Twitter, and Letterboxd.
Tyler?
Find me on Instagram at Twitter at Tyler Sutkus, SUTKUS.
And I'm on Instagram and Twitter at Michael_Gallet and on Letterboxd at mgallet. Well, the celebration of 2021 is not yet over. We will be back with a bonus episode for our first annual Silver Screen Saver Awards. We'll see you guys then.
Silver Screen Savers Podcast was co-created, written, hosted, and produced by Michael Gallet, Tyler Sutkus, and Matt Sturdivant, with additional editing by Matt Sturdivant. Intro music by Charles Michel via Pixabay. Logo design by Nathan Seidel.